Time to talk money. And widely published financial author and columnist and speaker Mary Holm is back with another instalment in her series on personal finance. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Jesse.
Chatting insurance today at my request because everyone has to make some choices about how much insurance they pay. It's a very pressing issue and we often feel like we don't have much information. So I'd be delighted for you to shine what light on it you can.
I'll do my best, yeah. I did just want to say that I'm not that up with all the convoluted ways insurance is sold, all the commissions. I know broadly what happens, but I'm not, you know, really going to give terribly good answers to questions about this broker does this and that broker does that, or I've got an old policy, should I surrender it or not? I'm more sort of taking the bigger picture of broadly what sorts of insurance should you have and how should you work out how much of it to get, and that's those sort of issues.
Yeah, so you should feel free to say, talk to an insurance broker if you need to during this slot. And before we begin on insurance, we got a letter last week which might be worth covering before Christmas.
Yes, somebody broadly asking whether they wanted to give some money to a, how did they describe the person? It sounded like a young person who spent a lot of money.
Yeah, I think it was their son, wasn't it?
Yes, I think a spendthrift son.
Here we go. I want to get a Christmas gift for a spendthrift in their 20s. Is it better to make a payment against his student loan or contribute to his KiwiSaver?
Yes, and the short answer to that is definitely KiwiSaver, because especially if the son hasn't yet in the core or won't by the end of June the 30th put in $1,043, because you know any money you can put in to help somebody get to that level means they're getting the maximum government tax credit of 521. So it's particularly powerful. It's like every dollar you put in, the government puts in 50 cents. Whereas repaying a student loan, because student loans are interest-free, it doesn't really make financial sense to pay them off any faster than you have to. It's better to be saving the money in KiwiSaver or in any other type of savings and earning interest on it rather than paying back an interest-free loan. But look, that whole question about priorities between repaying different types of loans and making different types of savings and whether you should attack your mortgage first and all of that is a whole topic in itself that I plan to get into in the new year so people can sort of work out what their top priorities are. But a bit of a big topic to take on as well as insurance today.
Yeah. Okay, well let's talk on insurance. And what is your approach to buying insurance?
Well, one key point I used to make when I lectured it to the students is that it's best to be ripped off by insurance in that you put in more money over your lifetime than you ever get back out of it again, because that means you haven't made very many claims, which means you've had quite a nice life, really. You know, I mean, the poor sod whose house burns down, and okay, they go in and make a very big claim and get a lot more money back from insurance than they will ever put in their lifetime. But, you know, that's, money's not the only thing. They've got to turn around and build a whole new house and go through all the sadness and everything else. Same applies for sort of major car problems. You know, injuries aside, there's still huge hassles involved in making insurance claims of any sort, really, and getting the repairs made and so on. So I always think, you know, the ones who put money in for all those years and never get a dot back again shouldn't complain, they should be grateful that they've had a sort of smooth life, if you will.
Yeah, that's a nice way of thinking about it. I mean, that sometimes I don't have health insurance, and sometimes I think, oh, what if I end up buying it and then I never have to claim it? Then won't that be a bummer? But I like the way you think about it, which is, of course, that will mean I'll have a long and healthy life.
That's exactly right, yes. So the more you get ripped off by insurance, the better off you are, really. It's a sort of more positive way of thinking about it, I think.
It's like betting on Australia when the All Blacks play against Australia. Like, even if we lose, you win some money,
that's
maybe.
That's right. Yeah. It's kind of a hedging your bets in a way, isn't it?
Yes. Okay, and so I only mentioned myself, people won't be interested in what insurance I've got, but it's just an illustration of the sort of things you go through. I mean, I waited a long time in life before getting life insurance. I never really thought about it, and then suddenly I had a mortgage and a wife and some children and began to think about it for the first time.
Yes, absolutely, and that's when you do need to. It's New Zealanders tend to be underinsured on life insurance. the companies tell us. We tend to do well on things like cars and houses, but not so much on life insurance and disability insurance. And one key point about life insurance is to choose what they call term insurance, which means you're covered for a particular period. You know, you're paying your premiums and you're covered for a particular period. Don't go into those more complicated policies where there's a savings element to them as well, because they don't tend to be a very good deal. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but I've been told by the experts that you're better just to get a simple policy. And that you're quite right, you need it if you've got dependents. And so, you know, young people who haven't yet got anybody else who's going to be in trouble if they die, and financially in trouble, don't need it. And nor do people as they get older. You know, once the kids have gone and hopefully they're financially independent, then you don't really need it anymore. Okay, you might have a partner who would quite like some extra money if you die, but if you've in fact, you know, let's say you've got, you're in retirement and your house is paid off and you've got some savings, then you don't really need life insurance at that point in your life either. So you've just got to, you know, think clearly about, if I'm not here anymore, who is going to suffer financially and how much are they going to suffer financially? And that's when you need it. A key point here is whether non-working parents should have life and disability insurance, and the answer to that is definitely yes. A lot of people overlook that. They've got, let's say, often it's the woman at home looking after the little kids and the guy working. If the woman were to die or become disabled, then typically the family's going to need to get in somebody else to help look after the children. And so, you know, for those key years, it's quite important to have coverage for the, you know, for the child looker after as well.
Yeah, but perhaps not as much, right? So, So if the main income earner dies, then you need to replace their income, really, or at least as much of it as you need to survive. But if the person looking after the kids dies, it's quite a grim thing to talk about, I've got to say, but if they die, then you really need enough life insurance to make sure that the main income earner can keep earning income.
That's right, and because they've got what duties, for want of a better word, the stay-at-home parent is with performing, they've got that covered by somebody else in some way. You know, it is quite a big thing, though. I mean, you don't want to. You've got three little ones now, I think.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what their daycare is, but let's just say they were at home with their mum. Then you might want to get a live-in nanny for a few years, or somebody who's there all day, or you might want to put them into some very good quality daycare, or whatever. Mm. You know, so just don't overlook that, that's all. It is commonly overlooked. The best place, I reckon, to go to work out how much life insurance you need is to go to the Consumer New Zealand website. They've got a calculator there. You probably can't get onto that calculator if you're not a member of the Consumer New Zealand. I'm not sure. You can get onto some stuff and not others. Mm. But I would strongly advise all listeners to join up anyway. It's a not-for-profit organisation, and it's so useful. You know, anytime anything breaks down, recently my microwave broke down, and I thought, oh, I don't know where to start on how to buy a new microwave.
Yeah.
Go to their website and they tell you what to look for, you know, what features matter, what ones don't, and what brands are reliable and what ones are cheap, and it's terrific. So I'd recommend everybody sign up for them.
Mm.
And they've got this life insurance calculator which just prompts you to list things like expenses like your mortgage and other debt you've got, and an ongoing income that's going to be needed if you die. And if you just work your way through that, it'll come up with, you know, you need to be insured for X lump sum, depending on how old your dependents are and all of that. So that's...
Okay, that's Consumer NZ site.
Yes.
Just, I've got another question that's just come through. I don't know if you'll be able to cover this one or not, but someone wants to know how much she needs to advise her insurance agent of new ailments, the results of scans, blood tests. She's recently had a lot of medical work done and she's not sure whether she has to call her insurance agent up and tell them all about it.
I would suggest that she does anyway. I'm not, you know, if she's already got the insurance in place, they whether or not that's going to affect the insurance she's got, I'm not sure. But I all the way through today, one clear message is, for goodness sake, disclose anything that you think maybe you should be telling the insurance company. If you don't, you get away with it until you make a claim. You know, I mean, a lot of people, for example, with car insurance, they are asked if they've, you know, had been involved in crashes, and they say no, when in fact they have, and they get the insurance and everything's fine, they pay the premiums, and they think, oh, I got away with that. No, you know, and because the insurance company doesn't research it until you make a claim. It's not worth their while researching the background of everybody with insurance, but it is worth their while researching it when you come to make a claim and they have to pay out.
Right.
At that point, they look into your record and say, terribly sorry, even though you've been paying money all these years, we're not paying because you didn't tell us about something that we said on the form you had to tell us about. You know, so fibbing to insurance companies is, you know, dishonesty aside, it's stupid. And so for that person, I would suggest they ring, if they've bought it through a broker, talk to the broker. If they haven't, ring the company and just say, I've had some tests, what do I have to tell you? You know, it's far better to do that than... if, in fact, she should be telling them that in order to be able to make claims, then she'd better do it, if you see what I mean. There's no real loss from doing that. And if they say, no, we don't need to know that, well, that's cool. But, yeah... Yeah.
Okay, a couple of good news, well, not, they're certainly not good news stories, but yeah. Let me read them to you. You can decide what sort of stories they are. Hi, Jesse and Mary. My husband and I returned to New Zealand aged 31, bought a home and took out life insurance. Later that year, my husband fell ill and he died 3 years later. I was left with two small children and a whole lot of grief, but I am also mortgage-free and financially comfortable. Get life insurance now, says Angela.
Yeah, that's a really good letter, isn't it? Because people do often think they're young and fit and, you know, they don't need to worry about that until they're in their 50s or 60s or something. And that's, you know, she's a good example of when not to do that. Mm. Yeah.
So on to other types of insurance then. Someone wants to know, is health insurance worth the expense for retirees?
And that's a really good question because the premiums go up fast the older you get. And in short, I would say on health insurance that it's best to get coverage for the big bad things that might happen, like surgery and perhaps any other hospital expenses and perhaps specialist expenses, but probably not GP visits, because you and just cover that yourself when you, you know, every time you have to pay for a GP visit, sort of keep in mind that you've kept your insurance premiums down, you know. But it's good to cover for the big bad stuff. Now, some people say, oh, look, you don't really need to in New Zealand. The government will cover you. You know, knowing some retirees, I've seen what happens. If you get, say, you need a knee replacement or a hip replacement or something like that that's not going to kill you, you can wait a long, long time on the public hospital list to get to the point where you're hobbling around on a walking stick and can, you know, barely do the supermarket shopping, whereas if you've got private insurance, once it starts getting a bit difficult to walk up a hill, you can go and get the knee replaced. And so it's a quality of life thing, really. And personally, I reckon people in their old age want to make health a very high priority, you know, compared with, say, travel or other things, because if you haven't got your health, you're not going to enjoy the travel or anything else, really. So So I think have some health insurance if you can possibly afford it, but not necessarily the GP visits.
22 past two, I'm talking to Mary Holm. I will jump out of insurance for a moment. I've just had some information come through about a chat that we had earlier on today with the New Zealander who had come up with the online food bank. And I gave his website address out and I got it wrong. So I just want to let you know, if you heard that interview earlier and you wanted to check it out, it's foodbank.org.nz. I think I said foodproject.org.nz, but foodbank.org.nz. It's the way of donating to food banks online. And it's been a big success, and I want to make sure that people who need to go there, go there.
That sounds neat. Yeah, that sounds good. Now, just before we get right off life insurance, I wanted to just quickly say, here are a few times in your life when you really want to think again about whether you've got life insurance and how much. When a child's born, when the children become financially independent, when you get a mortgage, when you pay off a mortgage, when a marriage ends, because that does change a whole lot of factors there.
Mm.
When your savings grow to a certain amount, for example, if you've got quite a lot in KiwiSaver, that goes directly to your dependents if you die. They don't have to wait until you would have been 65. They get it straight away. So if you've got, $100,000 in KiwiSaver, then you might think, well, if I don't die, I don't really need life insurance anymore because they'll get that instead. It depends on the circumstances, but...
And the message there is to not just to buy it and then forget about it, right?
And
I've talked to people in insurance brokers, and they say that's what they try and tell their clients, which is every couple of years to look at it. And because also as your mortgage is reduced, you potentially need a bit less life insurance if one of the main reasons you're doing is to pay off the mortgage, right?
Yeah. Some of these things are sort of good news in terms of that you can reduce your mortgage, your insurance, I mean. When the mortgage is paid off or when the kids leave home or whatever. So it's sort of, just keep an eye on all those, big life situations. Another just quick point about life insurance. There are policies out there that pay only if you die in an accident. And they seem really cheap. And that's because not very many people die in accidents at all. And so they're not a very good deal. People say, oh, well, I'll get one in case I die in an accident. If you die from some other reason, your family's just as badly off as they were if you died in an accident, So I'd stay away from that and just go with the plain insurance that pays up whatever you die from. Okay, enough on dying.
Yeah. Well, one person points out on text, life and income replacement for sickness or disability or unemployment for both partners all seems like a lot to get. How do we work out the priorities on these?
Yeah, and that's while we're just on that income protection, that was the next thing I was going to talk about, that basically that's another one that a lot of people don't have enough of. And what usually typically would happen with that income protection or disability insurance is that if you can't work for a month, or it might be 2 months, or it might be 3 months, then the money starts to come in. And it might continue on for just a few years, or it might continue on all the way until you turn 65, depending on what policy you get. But basically, that works for... it's one thing if you die and they pay up, but if you can't work and can't earn an income, you might get a benefit, but that's going to be a lot less than most people's income. So it helps to fill that gap, and that's really important to get. Now, so the person's question was, how do you work out how much?
What the priorities are, what to get.
and how can we say, nobody can know whether... You've got to have a bit of both, really. It'd be better to have a smaller amount of life and income protection than all of one and none of the other. Because we just cannot predict, you could be in a car accident that disables you and makes you unable to work, but you might live for many years yet. And so your poor family hanging out for the life insurance.
I just realised I keep interrupting you, Mary, and we're running out of time to cover those other parts of insurance. So what would you like to say about other forms of insurance?
Yes, let's go quickly through some other key points. On the income protection, if you're employed, ask your employer how long they would pay you if you were disabled, because you don't want to get cover if the employer says, look, we'd cover you for a couple of months. You don't need insurance for that. On house and contents and car and so on, stupid acts are sometimes covered if they're unintentional. So, just because you've done something stupid, like I once cleverly flooded a house and by doing something really stupid, and it was all covered even though it was stupid. but not if you've done something illegal, or, for example, drunk driving. Not everyone realises that. They think, they might lose their licence, they might be in a crash, but... those are bad things, but your insurance won't cover either. If you're drunk when you have the crash, you're not covered by insurance. On house and contents insurance, the difference between the two that someone told me that I think is kind of neat is if you turned your house upside down and shook it, what would fall out? So fixed carpets are part of the house, but loose carpets are part of the contents.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. They're not always replaced as new, so just check on your policy. You know, and some policies will give you brand new furniture and that if the house burns down. Others will only say your furniture was 20 years old and, you know, it would only be worth X dollars on Trade Me, so you can, here's X dollars and you can go and get some more off Trade Me.
Mm. Someone says, in terms of houses, this business of your insurer demanding that you, the non-expert, assess how much your property is worth, or rather your house is worth, is very silly. What do you make of that, Mary?
Yes, yeah, and that's all happened since, I'm pretty sure it's because of the Canterbury quakes, that suddenly they're, you know, so...
They want to know what they're up for.
Yeah, and the insurance company said, we've got to get more accurate pictures here. And I can see their point, and I agree. When I had to renew my house insurance last time and they asked me what my house was worth, there are online calculators that help you work it out. And if you want to do something more thorough than that, you've got to pay a valuer to come and value your property. But when you think about it, how else can the insurance companies get a valuable, you know, get an accurate picture of what your house is worth? I mean, if you want them to pay the valuer, then that's just going to mean higher premiums.
Mm.
They're simply going to add that to the premium. So I don't see a way around it, really. You've got to either use what I did is use the online calculator and then add another 50,000 or 100,000 on top of that just to make sure I really was covered.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you did lose your whole house, it'd be terrible and it'd be, you know, add to the stress if you didn't have enough money coming in as well as all the other problems.
Yeah.
What have I got here? Make sure your contents cover also covers stuff when you're not at home. You know, if you take your camera to the beach and lose it or whatever, that will still be covered under most policies. So that's just something to watch out for. On cars, you want at least third-party cover. And don't forget to tell the company about driving offences and modifications. We talked about that before. Don't forget also to reduce your cover as your car value goes down. You know, car values can fall very fast, especially if you buy a new car.
Mm.
So you don't need as much cover a few years later. I'm just looking down here. We're running a bit short of time, aren't we?
That's all right. We can go for a few more minutes. Okay. What would you like? Oh, this is quite interesting in terms of car insurance, what you do after a car crash.
Yes, if you're in a car crash, first of all, obviously, you check everyone's okay. But you know, assuming there's no injuries involved, don't admit it's your fault, they say. But, you know, sometimes it's a bit hard, not because it clearly is your fault. But
you want to say sorry, don't you?
Yes, yeah, but they say you shouldn't do that. Note the registration and the type of car and the name and phone number of the other person involved in the crash. And people sometimes say, even just quietly, while, you know, perhaps waiting for the police to come or something, ring that number and make sure they've given you the right number, because people do sneaky things. And take photos, if you've got a camera there, of the car and you know, and where of both cars, where they were and all of that, because, you know, people can lie later on. It's really good idea, too, to get the names and phone numbers of any witnesses you can possibly do, because I've had a situation where was my son, actually, where the other driver said, oh, look, it's all my fault, I'm terribly sorry, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And so my son didn't get the names of witnesses, and then when it came to filing the insurance thing, the guy turned around and lied and said it wasn't my fault at all and told an entirely different story, and because my son didn't have any witnesses, he couldn't refute that.
Mm.
So, just a sec. I'll come to you in a minute. Yeah, sorry.
That's
right. Coming to the door. Just a couple of cross-cutting tips on insurance that I did want to just pass on to people. You know, with house and contents and car insurance, there are excesses that you pay a lot lower premium if the excess means that if there was a claim that cost $1,000, the excess might be $500. So you've got to meet the first $500 and the company pays the other $500.
Mm.
That'll cost you a lot less than if the excess is only $200 and the insurance company's got to pay $800. And I personally go for the high excesses. In other words, I insure only for the big disasters, not the little ones. And that means your premiums are a lot lower. And it works especially well if you're less likely than average to have claims.
or if you think, hey, well, if I get burgled, I'm willing to wear $1,000,
yes,
you know, myself, and if that means a lower premium, you're just really covering the worst case scenario, aren't you?
That's absolutely right, yes, and I think that's the smartest way to do it, unless you're particularly sort of accident prone sort of person. But by the same token, if you're getting disability insurance, make it a long period before, you know, 3 months before the payments kick in rather than 1 month, and you'll pay a much lower premium on health cover, as I said before.
And I think the same thing with life insurance. You know, you might decide that you don't need to pay off your entire mortgage if a partner dies, that you might just pay off, let's say, you know, 60-70% of it, so that their financial obligations are much less than they would be.
That's absolutely right, yes, because then you're going to be paying a lot less premiums, and you've got a lot more savings to do other things with in the meantime, you know, and so yeah, you've got to weigh all that up, but you're quite right. Okay, just cover for the disasters. Another way to cut costs is to get, and a lot of the companies will charge you less if you've got alarms on your house, sometimes on your cars, you know, find out what ways you can cut the premiums down. A lot of companies will give you discounts if you insure the car and the house and the contents with the one company. Perhaps also a caravan, boat and all of that. The more you insure with them, the cheaper they'll be. So that's worth doing.
Interesting, Mary. Sorry, I've just received a text from someone. You were talking about valuation of your home. And this person says that their insurance company requires her to pay for a valuation every 3 years, which costs her about $750.
Gosh.
It'd be time to change insurance companies, wouldn't it?
I think so. To my knowledge, that's not all that common. And so, yes, I would suggest that she looks on the Consumer New Zealand website, which has got very good insurance comparisons on it, and have a look at some other companies that are offering pretty good deals on that. That seems excessive, doesn't it?
Mm.
But it's a tricky one. Cutting tip is that you can quite often get coverage through work for life, disability, health insurance, that sort of thing. And they tend to be cheaper premiums, partly because the insurance company can do it cheaper because it's doing it for 100 people at once. You know, that makes the admin a lot cheaper. Also, people who are working tend to be healthier than the average person in the whole world. The workers are healthier than average people,
Who
include a lot of unhealthy people. And so that makes the premiums lower. So, you know, have a good hard look at what's being offered through the workplace. And there's one just final point that I just wanted to make, and that is insurance fraud. You know, if you're ripping off insurance companies, and people do it and they skite about it. I remember watching a guy hold a cigarette to the pants of his suit and saying, I need a new suit now. And so he held the cigarette to the pants, so it burnt a hole in them. Now I can go and claim and get a new suit. And I always thought, it's ripping off. It's not ripping off the insurance company. They just simply raise premiums to cover for all of that. It's ripping off your friends, your family, and you know. And if you're burning things down, it's ripping. It's pressure on the fire and the police, and you know. It's a horrible thing to do to everybody else.
Hope you didn't stay friends with him, Mary. Sounds like a jerk.
No, I don't know what's happened to him, but yeah, no, I didn't like his attitude.
Nice to chat to you. Talk to you. We're doing next week, are we? I can't remember.
I've been fired for next week. It's Christmas Eve.
Oh, yeah, we'll have other things on, I guess. Christmas Eve things. Well, thanks so much for your help this year, and we'll chat to you in 2016.
It's a pleasure, Jesse. See you later. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.